Ready to do the podcast, Rashi?
What do you got there?
Got some dates. You want some?
No. Since when are you able to get a date?
Well, no, these are dates. You eat them. They're good.
Oh, they're the kind you buy at the store.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so nothing's changed from your bachelor days. Still buying dates.
Okay, well, I guess I'll finish them myself then.
Yeah, enjoy. Probably they'll taste a little more bitter than they did before.
Rashi, you know me so well.
Yeah, just sit there in your shame.
Hi, welcome back for another one. I'm Paul Dini.
And I'm Misty Lee, and this is the All Tower Prep episode.
Woo. Of Radio Rashi.
Yeah.
Tower Prep, for those of you out there listening who don't know what that is, and why should you? It was a show that about seven people saw. It was a TV show that...
Ouch.
Yes, well, that ran last year on Cartoon Network. It was an hour-long drama mystery show set at a mysterious prep school where students were brought against their will and against their knowledge, and they could not escape from. And the idea was they were being prepped for something, but they weren't exactly told what that was. But as time went on, it was revealed they had certain abilities and certain destinies to be fulfilled. And it was like a riddle unwrapping what was going on there. And a lot of people liked the show, actually. Not quite enough to be a big ratings hit. You know, it was one of those shows in the 11 weeks it was on. It developed a pretty strong following, which continues even now. I get probably about 20 tweets or emails a day saying, when's the show coming back on the air? So I thought we'd do an episode that just sort of outlined the history of Tower Prep and talked about its chances for the future and perhaps answer some of the questions associated with it. I actually had put it out on my Twitter that folks should tweet in if there were any pressing questions, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Think I should go into the origin of the show or talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Well, Tower Prep came about. It was Cartoon Network wanted to get into live-action programming for kids, primarily for boys, about 3 years ago now. Boy, this has been a three-year odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And I pitched them the idea. It was sort of based on my boarding school experiences of what it was like the first year of boarding school, and sort of did it wasn't exactly like that, but it was sort of a cartoon of it, you know, or a caricature version of being sent away to boarding school. Our Boston Terrier Deuce is so interested in this. He
has come down to sit at your feet.
Come down to sit at her feet.
How cute is that?
And protest for things. I think he wants some of those dates I was eating earlier.
I think he wants to lick your leg.
Well, I don't know if he's going to do that. I think Rashi took the last of the dates and was scattering around the house. So I had been developing Tower Prep off and on for years. You know, I had pitched it around town and people seemed to be interested in it, various production companies, but there were no real takers because one of the strange things about TV these days is there's really not a lot of family programming on the major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. You know, traditionally, going back 20, 30 years, they would have shows for... more of a mixed audience, of a family audience.
Used to be the Disney's.
Yeah, and even like 30 years ago, there were shows like, they were what I called lunchbox shows. Any show that could get a thermos or Aladdin metal lunchbox made.
Okay.
Even if it was ostensibly for adults, like Charlie's Angels,
mm-hmm.
was a kid's show.
Yeah.
You know, because kids aren't taking...
$6 Million Man.
$6 Million Man.
Knight Rider,
Grizzly Adams, all those shows. I think they drew the line at something like All in the Family or MASH. I don't recall those ever making onto kids' lunchboxes.
That's too bad. I would have loved a Hawkeye lunchbox.
Or a Sanford and Son lunchbox.
Oh, yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah. I think the more adult sitcoms, they drew the line there. But I remember... like the tail end of the metal lunchboxes, it was things like...
I had a Rambo lunchbox.
The Rambo lunchbox.
Yeah.
I think that was the last one they did.
Yeah, I think so. It was a metal one, too. I loved it.
Yeah. I remember the last Star Wars movie, Return of the Jedi. That was the metal lunchbox. And then the Rambo lunchbox. And I think that was 84 or 85.
Because
I remember that I was working at Lucasfilm and then I was working on Ewoks and Droids. And I think there was a Ewoks lunchbox, but it came out. It was like the first of the plastic ones with just a sticker.
Yeah, I seem to recall that. Yeah.
And I go, how weak is that? I mean, I'd be ashamed of carrying that. Well, it's Ewoks, but two, it's, you need that heavy, that heft of the metal lunchbox.
Yeah, it's a defensive weapon as a child.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that was a problem, is so many kids were clobbering each other with them. But I think that, they're so much made of bullying, you know. And, oh, don't be a bully, don't bully. You know, it's like, start making metal lunchboxes again.
Yeah.
And teach kids... kids how to throw them, you know? It'd be like Ignatz lobbing that brick at Crazy Cat's head. You bully me, you get a lunchbox on the bean. You know, that would keep the bullies at bay. But now...
So they're looking for lunchbox shows.
Lunchbox shows, yeah. So there are no lunchbox shows anymore on network TV. You know, it's 8 o'clock and you either get sitcoms like Two and a Half Men or else you get police procedurals. Mm. And I think the thinking is now that all those family shows or lunchbox shows have moved off onto cable. And the networks say, we don't feel we have to compete with that. If kids want to watch a show like that, they will go to Disney. They will go to Nickelodeon. They will find those shows on their own. We don't have to do stuff like that anymore. And I can't think of what...
Yeah, it used to be that networks catered to the different kinds of audience, but now the networks have subdivisions. They have different cable channels that can take care of that genre for them. And if you need that, you go to their other station.
Right, right. I think there is... I think that's a type of TV that lies fallow for a few years, but I did recall reading that Steven Spielberg has a new show coming up about dinosaurs, about a family that travels back in time because the future is all screwed up. So they travel back in time to the age of the dinosaurs to make everything right. And
I mean, we mentioned briefly last time, Amazing Stories was a brilliant family show, I thought. It was able to do one and dones, you know, the whole family can gather around and watch a simple story.
Yeah, yeah, I loved Amazing Stories. I thought that was a great tryout venue for writers and directors, and also directors who'd been around for a while who just wanted to do something in the vein of, you know, Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. Alfred Hitchcock Presents or something like that. It was fun. I'm sorry. I think that only lasted, what, two seasons?
Yeah, two.
Yeah, yep. Two seasons. There were some good ones. That's Family Dog. They did an animated half hour based on an idea by Brad Bird with designs by Tim Burton. It was really cool.
And one of those earlier ones where the ghost train came plowing through the house. That was one of my favorites.
Yeah. Or the old magician, you know. Yeah. And that was a really good one. Yeah, I love those. Those were great things. Those are great stories. And it's too bad... I love anthology TV. In fact, that was, well, here to digress again, that was one of the first jobs I had in TV was writing for a show called Monsters.
Oh, that was a great show.
Yeah.
I know you wrote for that.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'd been writing animation for some years prior to that, but the first live action job I got was writing a few episodes of Monsters.
Yeah, it was a lot more tongue-in-cheek Freaks or something. It was...
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the producers made no bones about it because it was for syndication. Mm-hmm. It was on a very kind of restricted budget. And they said, look, if you can come up with an interesting story that has three actors, two sets, two interior sets, and one monster, we'll listen to you. But you have a good chance of pitching to us. But once you start doing exteriors, once you start doing interdimensional invasions with a lot of creatures and more than one monster, then, you know, the show is called Monsters Plural, but actually it just should have been Monster because that was usually what the budget allowed for. Although I got away with a family of them in the first one I did. I was lucky. I had Stiller and Mira and their daughter Amy. Ben was the only holdout to be a family of werewolves. And, yeah, that was fun. It was guess what's coming to dinner. It was a werewolf family and the daughter's marrying outside the faith.
Very nice.
So, you know, that was fun. And then I did another one that was just a guy being taunted by a voice on the phone. They were fun, you know, it stretched your creativity. But I love shows like that. I would love to do an anthology horror show.
So Cartoon Network's looking for something more family-oriented.
Yeah, so they wanted to do live-action programming. It was like they looked at the Disney and the Nickelodeon schedules and they said, well, why aren't we doing live-action programming? And
they had no apprehension of being called Cartoon Network?
Well, that was something that dogged them from the beginning, is our brand is cartoons.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Cartoons that are kind of out there, zany, more boy-centric than girl-centric, I would say, off the top of my head, although everybody watches, you know, that sort of thing.
I mean, Adult Swim was starting to pull away from that with the Tim and Eric Olsen show and stuff like that. And
right. I think they did a very savvy thing in their branding is that Adult Swim is always, it's like Adult Swim, which is part of Cartoon Network. It's like, you know, we're renting space in this building.
Yeah.
You know, like that sort of thing.
They aren't even in town, right? They're in Georgia.
Yeah. And they had never come up with a separate brand for Cartoon Network. It's just Tower Prep on Natural History on Cartoon Network. If they had come up with something like the Adventure Hour or something, or, you know, Adventure Channel or something like that, and clearly defined it from Cartoon Network, I think that's something that really harmed it from the very beginning, is you had kids kind of dead set against it because it's like, you're taking away our cartoons.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, we're not. They're still buying cartoons. They're buying, you know, Adventure Time. And, you know, there's a Looney Tunes coming on this year, a new Looney Tunes show, and a bunch of other new shows. And they're they're actually cutting back on the amount of reruns. I mean, do you want a two-hour block of Scooby-Doo reruns, you know, in the middle of the day?
Do we need to watch Ed, and Eddie in that 90th time?
Well, you know, and actually there are quite a few of them that did, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that it was an uphill battle that way, and also just getting the word out. You know, the that we got some great reviews on the show, and it was all like, on Cartoon Network, can you believe it? And it's like, well, nobody says, well, the Venture Brothers on Cartoon Network, can you believe they're running this? It's like, no, it's Adult Swim. It's clearly branded. So I think that that was a problem, and also just trying to, you know, get people to try it. And I think once they tried it, they liked it. And I think people liked A Natural History. They liked Tower Prep a lot. You know, and I think they liked the serialized format of Tower. We really tried to make it like a young adult novel series, with, you know, ongoing mysteries, and both about the school and about the characters themselves. And that's one thing I learned from being a comic book reader for years, being a young adult novel reader for years, is that you establish a sense of continuity and a sense of family among your characters. You know, people are going to tune in and watch that. You know, that's why soap operas are so popular. That's why well-done science fiction like Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek and all the others are so popular. They make you care about the characters. Buffy is like a classic example of that. I mean, weren't hard-edged like Buffy, you know, to any degree. Or...
Yeah, the action keeps the excitement level running, but ultimately people want to know what's going to happen with their favorite person.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're invested with the characters. Like the couple of years I was working on Lost, I have a whole chunk of my family's in Hawaii, and I said, do you ever watch the show? And they said, oh yeah, well, we know, we're aware of it. It's that show that shoots about a mile away from us. You know, I drive by it, and they're always shooting around town. You know, I'll get around to seeing it one day. That's my uncle, you know. My uncle Steven is very, not the big world's biggest TV fan, but he knew that I worked on the show and I wrote, you know, a few episodes and everything. But when, for whatever reason, Tower Prep really captivated him, and suddenly he's calling me and going, what's going to happen to Gabe next week? I'm so invested in the show. You know, and so it's like, wow, okay. So I guess there really was something that spoke to a lot of people there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and for being on Cartoon Network and aimed towards young boys, I definitely think it was an all-ages sort of show. It invited the interest levels of anyone.
Right, right. And I'm very proud of the writing that we did on it. We had some terrific writers on it. Glenn Morgan and his brother Darren Morgan were both star writers on The X-Files for years. And
oh, that's right.
They came on the show and wrote some of our better episodes. And, you know, just... some tremendous talent on the show. Really had a great time with them, with all the writers. And it's something that's generated a lot of fan interest. So I was going to go over some of the questions we've got off of Twitter that I've actually asked people to write in and say, you know, do you have any questions about the show? Like either the show's origin or things that are happening to the characters or, you know, mysteries. I can't clear up everything because I want to leave the door open for future episodes.
Of course.
Well, let's see. Well, the big question is, when is the show coming back?
No, of course.
I don't know.
That's still up in the air, huh?
It's still up in the air, and Cartoon Network has announced its slate for next year, and we're not on it. But it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yes, something could happen. I've worked in the TV industry long enough to know that things fall off and get put up just as quickly as being announced.
Yeah, you know, we're gonna have to wait on that. So let's see.
Questions from the fans.
Here's a question. Who is the old man Ian met in the tunnels? Will we see him again? He was in the final episode. Well, you're supposed to see him three times, actually. So I think at some point, yes, we will see him, and we'll find out a little bit more about him. Here's a question. Tower Prep on DVD, is this true or just a scam by someone? Somebody had forwarded me a link today that's asked about a DVD set being offered. And I won't say it's a scam, but it's whatever it is probably unauthorized because there are no plans to bring it out on DVD.
People just jumping the gun, expecting something, and...
Well, it probably is a DVD set, but it's not authorized because, you know, you go to a comic convention and there's always that table where they're selling all the episodes together. So
yeah, the sets of Angry Beavers that aren't out yet.
Actually, a good friend gave me all the Batman episodes from the Adam West TV series.
Oh, yeah.
And it's great to have them all. The quality is really great, but owing to legalities between, 20th Century Fox and DC, and
That's the reason why we only have the Batman movie, right?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate because for as long as they've been talking about bringing out the DVD set, it's got to be at least 15, 20 years, you know, however long we've had DVDs, they've lost more and more cast members. And so, you know, fortunately, Burt Ward and Adam West are still there, but most of the key villains have, Julie Newmar is still around, but Cesar Romero, mm-hmm. Burgess Meredith,
oh yeah,
Frank Gorshin, and it would have been great to have gotten them in to do commentaries, and I wish they worked that out at some point.
You can have an Eartha Kitt off, and all the Catwomans get together and stuff, that's about it, huh?
Yeah, well, Eartha Kitt, you know, didn't make it.
So. Did she just recently pass?
She passed away about a year and a half ago, I think, yeah.
Oh.
But Julie Newmar's still around, and I believe Lee Merriweather's still around. So,
okay.
Pretty soon it'll just be like everybody's gone. All the producers are gone. Most of the writers are gone, or they just don't want to bother with it. And then they'll come to guys like me and Bruce Timm. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, and or Jeff Johns or Grant Morrison or whoever's working on the Batman book nowadays. It's like, what do you remember of this episode? And it's like...
Kind of like what they do with the Super Friends now, actually.
Yeah. I always feel weird when somebody asks me to appear on the DVD section of a commentary for like an old Hanna-Barbera show, because the only connection I have is I watched it.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, you are in your own tribute a good authority on a lot of this stuff.
Well, yeah, you know, what I've pieced together here and there, or learned from folks who actually worked on this stuff, but still, I feel it's unfortunate. You know, I'm happy to do a commentary on a Bugs Bunny cartoon. I'm just sad, you know, Chuck Jones isn't around to do it, or Michael Maltese, or, you know, one of those guys.
It'd be nice to have more Adam West and Burt Ward getting drunk on the commentary of their track, like in the Batman movie.
Yeah. Do you remember when we were hanging up here and the Riddler had us in a giant ice cream cone? Oh, God, what's become of our career? I don't know. So, well, if they do a Tower Prep DVD, it would be great if it would be nice to actually do commentary on that with the other writers. Yeah. I would really want to get the writers who wrote the specific episodes to give the commentary on that with Glenn and Darren. Let's see.
Hey, I have a Tower Prep question.
Oh, yeah? What do you got?
Yeah, let's discuss the origin of Senor Guapo.
Senor Guapo?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, shall we talk about him for just a freaking minute?
Well...
Hey, how come he got tapped hardly and I did not?
Now, Rashi, you know, you...
Now, Dad, let's have a little discussion about where did he come from.
He wants some likeness rights, it sounds.
Well... Oh, yes, would you think so?
Well, I designed Senor Guapo and I made certain the...
In who?
I made sure he didn't look like you because I didn't want there to be any, you know, confusion there. So
there was
you know.
A sombrero. You don't wear a sombrero, Rashi.
No, Supreme is Mexican.
Well.
Oh.
There are similarities.
There are no new ideas in this house. Everything's up in the Paul Dini grabbable zeitgeist.
Are you calling your father a thief?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He just grabs it with both hands.
I own it. All right.
I've been enjoying you guys talking so much.
Thanks.
Here, I've got one here. What is Fenton's superpower? That's from Marley Schaffner. Schaffner or Schaffner? She's wandering Molly on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
So what is Fenton's superpower? I love Fenton. Can I just
Fenton
tell you guys that, please?
Fenton, we haven't established what his ability is. It's probably to be super annoying because he kind of is, but he's actually in he came off as sort of annoying in the first episode that he was in. But actually, we made him a little more sympathetic. We all kind of liked the character a lot, and we liked the fact that he was sort of this guy who made no bones about the fact that he was an aesthete and he loved art and he loves opera and he loves music. And yeah, he's kind of a character you can have fun with. But it's also important to me, like, whenever we use the character, that his tastes are not bad things. Because there are too many times there are kids on a screen who get pigeonholed as the nerd or the oddball or something. But, you know, he's got very clearly defined tastes in music and literature and everything. And I think, you know, why not? Well, you know, why not make that kind of a cool thing? Or at least make him an engaging and a likable character. And I think in the field trip story, he began to come a little bit into his own as being a little more intuitive than the other kids and kind of recognizing the fact that CJ was sort of torn up over Ian and Cal and kind of, you know, being able to read her a little bit. I don't know. Talking amongst ourselves, we always thought about Fenton's ability as being, you know, some sort of heightened level of perception. I'm not saying that's what it is, but he does seem to be very intuitive where the other kids are. And he knows that the other kids kind of make fun of him and think that he's sort of a throwback to a weird other time. But he's okay with that. He really enjoys, you know, who he is and what he's into. He's actually based on a character. He's actually based on a friend of mine from prep school days who was who was like the kid who walked around wearing like a golfing outfit. You know, like he'd wear knickers and
the ones that come out. Tie. At the legs there that had the little point. No, that's...
Yeah, he was like, he dressed out of the style of the Great Gatsby. You know, I went to prep school and we didn't really have to wear uniforms. We had uniforms and we had to wear them at certain times. This one young man really enjoyed, you know, dressing up, and he sported a Tyrolean hat occasionally, and he was very much into opera, and we did have a weird music, you know, circle. So he was very much, you know, we would listen to a lot of opera together and a lot of weird music and stuff like that. I say weird music because it was what other kids were not into, you know. So it's like we'd break out the blues and the jazz and the classical music and stuff like that. And that was kind of what was great about being an oddball at my prep school, is that everybody who was sort of like off on the fringes really liked weird music. And it was be everything from, you know, electronic pop to Sun Ra to Howlin' Wolf to Wagnerian opera. So,
wow.
So Fenton's kind of like a nod back to that time.
Very nice.
Yeah. Let's see if we got another question here. Marissa Di Giacomo says, what actually happened to The Broken? Also, I'm missing your guapo. Well, I'm missing your guapo too. What actually happened to The Broken? They were gotten out of harm's way by Headmaster. As to what happens to them again, we'll have to wait and see on that. But The Broken, you know, are going to be, continue to be a big part of the show. And they were sort of a favorite element of mine. These were kids who had referred to just a small bit of dialogue in the pilot where Math says to Headmaster, not every kid copes with what we do here. Some of them break. And Headmaster says the strong ones don't. So there were kids out in the woods around Tower Prep who were broken by the program, who had abilities and who either couldn't deal with the program or the structure of the school or their classmates or whatever, and it left them shattered, and they formed this other society in the woods. So that was a favorite element of mine, and one I really liked a lot. So let's see. Paul 171121 on Twitter says, I checked that returning series article. Almost all the comments were about Tower Prep, so I guess that was about Cartoon Network announcing their new series. And that's nice to know. I mean, hopefully the comments were, you know.
I'm sure they were mainly positive.
I did check that out. And there were a few like, good riddance. But most of it was like, hey, you know.
There's always some sour grapes online somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, I would be suspicious if there weren't.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It would be like, okay, then nobody has noticed the show. And it's just like three guys who want the show back who are doing this. I mean, yeah, that's a big thing about the internet, is like, as a creative person, you're tempted to get online and see what people say about your work, whether you're a writer or an artist, a singer, whatever. You just have to know. And, you know, there's always that little rush of like, oh, that was really good. And then, you know, there's invariably, boy, that stank. Boy, whatever it was, that movie stank, that song was awful.
Least they're aware of it, though.
Yes. Yes, and there is... Yes, and that does...
They said our podcast stunk. Not kidding.
No. Well, that's like that line I really like from Pirates of the Caribbean, where someone says to Captain Jack Sparrow, you're the worst pirate I ever heard of. And he says, but you have heard of me.
Yeah.
So no press is bad press. Mm-hmm. So take the Captain Jack attitude toward it. Now, here's a question from J. Gray Webcomic. Did the Siren girls have a group power, or were they three girls with the same power? The Sirens were in the Odyssey episode, and they were, as Ian went on his quest to unravel the mysteries of a special copy of the Odyssey left for him, he met these three girls who are kind of unique at Tower Prep. They're three Siren roommates, and when he goes inside there, it's like, whoa, this is not a kid show anymore. There are three hot babes here beckoning me in. So I'm not sure if that was their power. I think all girls kind of have that power, and I think
especially when there's three of them.
yes, and it was. They did gang up on him. And I think that if we ever see the Sirens again, then I think they might each have three individual powers. But, you know, like I said, that's sort of a power that most teenage girls have. TLSFG, Dustin Wise writes, is Cornelius Tower based somewhat on yourself? A crazy old man who's into magic and rare animals? No, there's no similarity at all. Yeah. Made him up completely. Darren created him out of thin air.
Yeah.
No, actually, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of ideas floating around the room that we all brought in our weirdest ideas, you know, and put them all on the table, not just for Cornelius, but for a lot of other characters. And I think Darren was very good at taking a lot of his own ideas and fusing them with one or two that were sort of on the table, and he created that great character. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Man, I just want to see the Cornelius Tower show. This was, I so love that episode and the flashbacks and to Tower's life. And you realize that this guy has to be at a minimum of 110 years old to have done everything that he did in his life.
Yeah.
And, but I always, you know, I always imagined that, you know, the school had a founder similar to that. And when I read that episode, when I read that script that came in, I just thought, man, Darren did such a great job in there. And he actually
knocked
used
it out of the park.
Yeah, yeah. And he did later say to me, you know, when I gave him a magician name, I used Tower Dini. You don't mind, do you? I mean, I that was unintentional. I said, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's sort of a joke, you know. It's like, I like magic and my wife's a magician, so sure.
It works.
Leave it in there. Yeah. So that was fun. I love episodes that just add a lot to the mythology.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, Tower's a fantastic character. He's a little mixture of Charles Foster Kane and Willy Wonka and just some screaming out of his head guy, insane guy. And I love the line in there, like, you know, Suki, I think, says, you know, what if it's all made up? And then Ian says, even worse, what if it's all true? Because the guy, you know, has been hospitalized for years. He's had numerous mental breakdowns and then he built this school. So, yeah. parents, send your kids here. It's pretty good. It's run by a crazy man. So, and I think, and a lot of folks are just saying, you know, what's going to happen with the cliffhanger? Will there be a season two? Well, God willing. Let's see. I recommend it to all the dads I know. Thank you. So thank you everybody for coming. Oh, here's one. Will there be a Jingle Bell movie this Christmas? Well, not really on the...
Jingle Bell was in Tower Prep?
No. No, although at one point, there's a very roundabout kind of nod to her in the second episode. The, you know, Ian says, who runs this place? Santa's elves? And it's like, oh, okay. So there's a brief reference to Santa's elves there. No Jingle Bell movie this year.
Do you ever get tempted to leave, or how much pull would you have to say, have little references to other things in your career, in your show like that? Like even Nathan Fillion in his Castle show references Firefly and leaves little trophies hidden around, but he's an actor, obviously. It's a little easier.
Well, having Ian and Headmaster talk about Santa's elves running Tower Prep is like, that's pretty generic, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of like, you know, chuckled when I wrote the line, but it's like, you really have to stretch to connect those dots.
Yeah.
Gabe actually makes reference to, there are a few Batman references in the first episode.
Oh.
And Gabe says to the gnomes, you know, fly on back to the Batcave or wherever you guys, you know, come from. It's warranted because those guys look like something out of Batman.
Oh, definitely.
And Gabe, you know, is a quick thinker, so he would refer to something like that. I don't usually do it because I think it... Or I rarely do it because I kind of like each thing to stand on its own.
Mm.
If there is a reason for characters to be referenced in something else, I make sure the character is well known enough. Like Batman is well known to everybody, so that's a reference they would make. By, you know,
it has to be organic.
Yeah. By the same token, Jingle Bell could, you know, be seated in Santa's workshop and be carrying, you know, working on a load of Batmobiles or something. You know, it's like, you know, it's theoretically, you know, that would be a toy that every kid would want. I've never put it in because...
Would it be out of the question to have like a Madame Mirage poster on one of the kids' dorm walls?
I think that would be a little self-serving.
Yeah.
Because it just would be too much. I remember on Lost, there for the episode where... Oh, if I'm remembering it correctly, it's been so long. Kate had the toy airplane, and it was buried in a lunchbox. We were looking around for something that we could get that was either public domain or something that we could get the rights to fairly simply. And I did suggest to Damon Lindelof, well, there actually is a Jingle Bell lunchbox, and I'll let you use it, you know, gratis. But, you know, then that I feel that would have been self-serving, and it also would have been very inaccurate because... the story with the lunchbox took place when Kate was a little girl, and Jingle Bell, yeah. You know, was only would have only been created like, you know, 6 years prior to that. So it wouldn't have worked. And also, you know, when you do stuff like that, it really has to fit the moment, or else it does stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
I really discourage that in my writing. And I know a lot of fans love it, and I think it's great, but you know, when it works, but you know, it just gets a little close sometimes when it, you know, something, you know, like we have Rashi, you know, but we all, Señor Guapo, you know, is in there. But kids like sock monkeys now. You know, the sock monkey is the new teddy bear. And at one point, in one early draft, Señor Guapo was a teddy bear. And then we thought, well, a kid wouldn't have a teddy bear. But
I love sock monkeys.
Yeah, that's the thing. Kids love sock monkeys now. So I thought, well, it's a little close. But as long as it's not Rashi himself, then it's fine. So, as far as Madame Mirage goes, you know, I just don't think it would be organic. I think it would just stick out a little bit too much. But when there's a moment for it, you know, it's certainly fine. Well, and I think that kind of finishes up a lot of the Tower Prep questions. I am doing a panel this week, which will have passed by the time this airs, at WonderCon. So I imagine I'll get a few more questions there. Not on Tower Prep, but on the panel isn't on Tower Prep, but it's on animation writing.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be fun, and I should have a report on that in a couple of weeks. But Mark Evanier, Alan Burnett, and Stan Berkowitz and I are doing an animation writing panel.
Good panel.
Yeah, so...
hope everyone was able to catch that.
Yeah, we should have those guys over here. I mean, it was so much fun having Ken Plumen a couple of weeks ago to be...
Oh, that was a blast.
Yeah, to be our special guest, that it's... that it would be fun to actually do something like that here and talk about writing, and whether it's comics or animation or screenwriting or whatever it is.
That sounds great. Well, I guess we should wrap it up, everyone.
Well, what a fun evening that was. You don't think you gave away too many secrets, do you?
No, I mean, no, not really.
You still have enough ideas in that head of yours for a season two?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
As soon as we get one, if and when we get one, there will be...
When
we get one, there will be plenty of... plenty of new ideas and new surprises and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun experience. I can't wait to do it again.
Well, it's a fun show.
Yeah.
Keep those questions. Keep those letters to Cartoon Network coming. And keep tuning in, because he's got more questions to answer.
Keep leaving us some iTunes reviews. We got a couple more. We got a 5 out of 5 stars going. It's
all right.
Good.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Emily, did you talk at all? No.
Say something, Emily. Just...
Feels a little odd saying things at the end.
I know. I feel the exact same way. I was just sitting there listening and just enjoying. So you and I were just in the exact same spot. Well, all right, everybody. We'll see you next week. And thanks again for tuning in. We do appreciate you.
Yep.
Have a great day.
Guapo. Señor Guano, that's what you are, Dad.
Now Rashi.
Batshit crazy.
No respect. No respect at all.
That's right. That's what you have for me.
Look, I'll give you half of my next royalty check.
Oh, boy. I can almost buy a half a comic book.
No, they're $4 now.
Okay, a quarter of a comic book. God.